Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Project Egg Show. I'm your host, Ben Gothard, and today we have the honor of speaking with the one, the only, Adam Lewis Walker. How are you doing today, Adam?
Good, man. Yeah, legendary. Thank you for having me on. It's obviously Friday afternoon here, and so it's a good way to close out the working week for me. So,
well, I appreciate you carving out some time in the old end of week sesh. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited to chat with you. And I really want to start off by asking you, what is your story?
Oh, I will give you the rapid fire, kind of the highlights. Originally from England, south of England, halfway between London and Brighton. This seems to be sort of a couple of landmarks that Americans or people in general know. So I moved across to America about 4 years ago, just over. I'm up on the Great Lakes in the middle of nowhere. Historically, I was a PE teacher in England for 10 years, a decade, a semi-professional pole vaulter who then had a very bad pole vault accident in the rain in English summertime, as you do. And that kind of screwed the pole vault career, that aspect of things. But ultimately, my lifestyle then was really kind of teaching, having the summers off, competing. That's when obviously the track and field season stepped up. Very dedicated to trying to get to the Olympics and just loving that lifestyle. And so I was with this pole vault accident. I dislocated my knee, tore my ACL, and ripped all the meniscus cartilage off the bone ends. And so that kind of was my fork in the road, my turning point where, I was very lost, not a happy bunny. And that changed everything for me. We can go into more of this, but ultimately co-authored a book in 2013, The New Rules of Success. And then, as I say, made the decision to move across after launching the podcast, Awaken Your Alpha, that's been going as good time. And it's just popped up there. Been going for almost, 5.5 years, almost 6 years, 373 episodes as of today. And again, did a TEDx talk. As you see the TEDx popping up there, TEDx talk titled Awaken Your Alpha in 2016, that has now become a best-selling book, Awaken Your Alpha. So there's a theme there as well. That's kind of some of the key points. And I'm in Northern Michigan now on the Great Lakes, so middle of nowhere.
So if that's the rapid fire, what's the full story?
Where do you want to dig into? I don't want to boil you. Oh, another cool thing. I have these certain things that I think are worth mentioning. Could forget some. When I got married, quit my job and went for a honeymoon around the world for a year traveling, backpacking. That was fun. And again, against popular opinion in terms of everyone at that stage is like telling you, don't quit your job. You know, you could, in a year's time, you could be here. And I'm like, the reality is, you know, came back a year. Everyone's like, was that a year? Nothing had changed. And we'd done 27 countries in a year for about the same sort of budget as an average Western wedding and honeymoon. So I would recommend, quit your job and go honeymoon around the world for a year. That's good.
So where did that fit into the chronology?
That was about 2007. Got married and then came back after the year, and it was tough to transition back into normal life. And then it was 2008 when I finally got my first personal best or personal record in pole vault for the first time since I was 21. I tore my groin at 21, and little injuries going traveling and different things. Came back, got 100% healthy, was, as I say, got my lifetime best that year, was doing my best season ever, and getting into the UK Challenge final and into the Irish Championships, and traveling around. The only time really I could class it as semi-professional, really loving my athletics. And that's when I had my accident, and I wouldn't be here talking to you today if that had now happened. So I can appreciate it now, but I struggled massively for a good couple of years when that happened.
So it seems like that was a very pivotal moment in your life, on your journey. How did that then lead to this idea of Awaken Your Alpha? Like, what was the origin story there? Where did it really come from?
So as I said, After the accident, it took about a good year for me to really get out of the denial phase of, you know, kind of putting that brave face on that a lot of people do, where you say, oh, I'm fine. And I was, you know, trying to sort of convince myself more than anyone else that I was fine. And so about a year in, really, you know, struggling, I just quit my job just before the accident. To go full time as I had a sort of a coaching youth strength conditioning business that was very physical, and I had coaches. And in reality, for 2 years, I was on crutches, rehab, prehab, another operation was there's trying to sort out the knee. I'd relied too much on my physicality in all and everything I did. So when that was kind of like rug pulled from under me, you know, I wasn't as mentally strong as I thought I was. You like to think you are, but until you've truly been tested, when it goes wrong, as it, adversity will come for all of us. I wasn't as prepped as I as I thought I was, so it was a tough time. And then, to say the big D word, I was, fully depressed for a good year to two when it came back, when after that period, and that's really where the whole time through I just wanted to feel better. I had to not awaken my alpha. I had to fight for my alpha in that period. And, you know, it was a lot of little things that kind of got me out of it. And through that process, then when I co-authored a book, the new Rules of Success, at that stage, I couldn't see the how these authors were joined up, because obviously I wasn't the ringleader. I was a piece of, you know, there was from all over the world, different professions. And I was like, I couldn't see the common thread. And then when I met them, I realized there is, even though on the surface it looked like we'd have nothing in common, we're having very in-depth conversations. And there are a lot of similarities between me as a teacher at that stage, at my age, and then like a 50-year-old dentist from South Africa. And I really kind of clicked the mindset and their approach to all these adversities and what they've done and their rules to success. So that's when I was like, well, at that stage, I didn't feel like there was a lot of international voices around this concept and these conversations. And that's where the idea for Awaken Your Alpha came, both as a book initially, book and podcast. The idea came at the same time. And I'm like, I need to share these conversations. And so I very much stuck to, especially in that first year and a half, 2 years, international conversations. So made a point of it being interviewing an American, interviewing an Australian, interviewing an English person, interviewing an African, and really digging into that. And as I say, the idea was always to have it as a book, but I didn't have the luxury of sitting around just researching a book for sort of 4 or 5 years. So that was, the podcast was the kind of the perfect vehicle for that. And then the 2018, that finally turned into the book. So that was very relieving to get that out before something happened to me. And that was, as I say, I launched that podcast. The first year and a half, almost broke me. It's 3 to 4 episodes a week. So it's very full on. And I'd quit my last sort of full on regular job because the plan was to move to America, to the middle of nowhere. And so I knew that wouldn't work where we was going. So from that point, I quit my job against advice, which was a tough decision to make because it was definitely in the comfort zone. I had 2 small children at that stage. But as I say, that when you're getting pulled in 2 different directions, you know, I'm not a professional teacher. I'm a semi-pro teacher. I'm not a professional entrepreneur. I'm a semi-pro. And you're going up against professionals in both worlds. So it was a tough time. And it was very relieving once you make the jump. Not easy, but then got across here. The podcast, once, you know, obviously done so much content, the podcast scaled down to 2 episodes a week, then 1 episode a week. The last thing I need is more and more content kind of thing. It's got so much good stuff there. And then did the TEDx talk, Awaken Your Alpha. And that really helped me kind of distill down what exactly is this concept of Awaken Your Alpha, as opposed to, you know, a long-winded answer like I'm giving now. And then that also formed the stepping stone and the 3 sections of the book, Awareness, Action, and Ascension, which was the core of the talk. And then that became the book. And there we go.
So it seems like being part of the book kind of stuck this idea in your head of like, there's something here of like this common thread between all of these people that's creating this depth of conversation. What was it that was so appealing about that? Was it just that the conversation was very rewarding, or was it like, wow, I am like, I'm learning so much, or this really is what it takes to be successful? Like, what was the draw of trying to figure out what that common thread was?
Yeah, I think it was just, you know, the connecting with like-minded people, and, you know, the world is a small place. I just found it very inspiring. And I've been inside this kind of world or this arena for such a long time now. But to think back then, it was that I hadn't been exposed to lots of them type of conversations. It's nice, like, you know, it's like if someone's got some weird thing who's listening to this, some weird like or preference, and they hear someone's exactly like them, and they're like, oh, we can relate, and like you get it, you get each other. It was that kind of thing, which on paper, as I said, you wouldn't have guessed that, and so it was just, you know, you're attracting like minds, and obviously a rising tide raises all boats type thoughts around the Awaken Your Alpha type thing. Like all the people I speak to on a daily and weekly basis, a lot of the things we talk about, it's almost like the norm. And, you know, it's the norm to, you know, help and, you know, raise each other up. It's the norm, but that's not the way in everyday life, in everyday society, for everyone. So I think that was kind of, you know, I hadn't been exposed a lot to that type of stuff. And I felt at the time there was say in terms of the podcasting world, there was, you know, I felt there was Americans interviewing Americans. So that my initial slant in it was to make sure it's very international. And just talking about that now, maybe I've slipped away because I've moved away to America. And a lot of my, because I can see the stats over like 5 years, a lot of my listeners are American. So maybe I interview more Americans now, but who knows?
So the initial draw, it really sounded like you found your tribe. Like yeah. You found you found people who are very similar to you in this one super meaningful way. And then it was like, okay, this feels like something different and better than normal. Now I want to investigate it and figure yeah. out what that really is and explore yeah. that to understand it.
Well, honestly as well, I found my mission, as you kind of the word that jumped to mind when you were talking about that. Cause you know, I had that mission of, you know, I was quite happy with my lifestyle in terms of, you know, how it all meshed together. And obviously the mission of in terms of the was all taken up with trying to get to the Olympics in some way, shape or form. And I'm going to be completely honest. I was a long shot. Like people who knew me, they would be thinking that's not going to happen. And I'm like, I was open to the fact, but that was my process and I was enjoying the journey. That was my kind of my mission to get to the highest level I could in that arena. So once that had been taken away, I definitely have felt times in my life when I've not been feeling the best mentally, or, you know, losing your mojo and interviewing lots of people, is when your mission is not so clear. And also on the flip side, when you have a very clear mission, or at least something you're shooting for and striving for, that makes, I think, things a lot easier. And linked to how I talked about being in the transition phase, that's hard because you are splitting yourself. Whether it's, you know, some of the greatest times I've had is like when we had a clear mission, right, we put our flag in the sand, we're going to go traveling for a year as a honeymoon, and, you know, we're not going to do the regular thing, you know, in the, you know, 3 or 4 or 2 years build up to that. That was a great period as well, because we're, you know, it's that common goal and, you know, we're all shooting for it, and you can see what the vision is and it came true. And similar for moving country to America, that's it. And the same for, you know, writing a book or having the, you know, this book written and the TEDx talk, it's the same sort of thing. It's kind of, you're drawn by inspiration as opposed to being pushed by desperation.
That was a super tweetable last sentence you just said.
I don't know what, again, when you've obviously interviewed a lot of people and read a lot of books and written books, I'm 99%. I am not the first person to say that's, you know, that's the variations that are all over the place. But, you know, that's, I definitely believe it.
Good stuff. So at this point then, because it seems like actually, let me ask this directly, because what my first thought was is it seemed like when you did find that new mission, the new mission was to like jump into this, understand it, and then to teach it through the book or maybe engage more in those podcasts and talking to more international people. But what really was there, like one specific mission of like, I want to help 4,792,000 people awaken their alpha? Like, what was the specific mission?
Yeah, it's a million entrepreneurs to rise up, because I mean, it doesn't have to necessarily be entrepreneurs, but it was to inspire a million entrepreneurs to just grab life by the balls, basically. And obviously with a name like Awaken Your Alpha, the podcast specifically was geared towards men's personal development, men's development show. But over the years, you know, a lot of the listeners and a lot of people read the book are female, and the Awaken Your Alpha concept is very much, it's not necessarily a male or female thing. It's if you're looking at the definition from the dictionary of alpha, it's Alpha Centauri, from the solar system to shine as bright. Oh, no, this is my explanation. The star that shines the brightest. And I interpret that to shine as bright as you can with your time here, not to put others in your shadow, but to illuminate. And then again, the other sort of example they give in the dictionary of alpha talks about the, from the animal kingdom, the alpha female of the elephant pack. So, you know, and sometimes a lot of times I have to defend the word alpha, because in society, it's seen as that, you know, that fat meathead kind of knuckle dragging Neanderthal type man, which is, again, it's just society is how we've abused that term over the years.
I love that. So it's about helping other people rise up and help them to illuminate and to shine.
Yeah, practice what you preach as well. Shine as bright as you can with your time here. So, you know, doing the, you know, for you personally as well, the best and most useful use of your time and talents, but also in terms of like to achieve the highest rank, like in the animal kingdom would be to achieve the highest rank in areas of your life that are important to you. So that comes back to the, you know, the first phase of Awakening Your Alpha, of awareness. It's really your own definition of success. So again, if someone says, oh, well, I don't, this is not an important aspect to my life. Cause a lot of times you have these things where people say, oh, you need to be doing this to be happy and fulfilled. And someone's like, well, this holds no weight for me. One of these aspects. Well, that's where it's for you to have that awareness of, okay, this holds no weight for me. So that's fine. I'm not going to be, you know, looking to have that balanced kind of lifestyle. This is one thing that's not on my list for now anyway, and having that awareness to reassess. And then, as I say, the core of all of this as well is action. I have a big, I can't swivel it around now, but across the whole one side of my office is just, again, linked to, we talked about these little things that people love. Anyone who's an Arnie fan, I'm pretty much going to be your friend, but I have across the other side of my office, do it now, Arnold 1987 from one of my favorite films, Predator. To just, you know, to take action, and that's no matter how small it is, to take an action, that not just think and procrastinate about this, you know, perfect inaction that you're not doing.
So I want to dig into your story a little bit, and then I want to ask related to the, like, these different areas of our lives. But first of all, I'm curious, when you quit your job and decided, well, you quit your job a couple times, but with the time when you were getting your podcast up and running and you're getting fired up about Awaken Your Alpha, did you just say, okay, I know this is what I want. My current job is not like putting me on a path to where I want to go, so I'm out. And then you just podcasted? Like, how did you support yourself? How did you take care of like your resources and make sure you had a roof over your head while you were building the show?
Yeah, so I've always been a coach, consultant to some level. I used to be, you know, strength and conditioning coach, and a lot of times you're working on mindset there as well. But when it came to quitting the last job and getting part of that transition, as a teacher in England, or wherever you're qualified, you're never going to go hungry, because you've always got the supply and substitute teaching option, in terms of you can use that to transition as well. If you want a day's supply work, it's going to be there. So that was actually, to a certain point, a lot of people I interviewed as well, they have that back up against the wall kind of story of adversity, where this had to work or. And one of the reasons I kind of not burnt my bridge, but removed it at some point, because that was holding me back, because I always had a very good plan B. You know, if this didn't work, I'll always be okay, because I had that plan B. So at some point I had to stop And you know, you can arrange an interview or certain things for certain days if you get the call and you've got to jump in and go and do some supply teaching. But I did do supply teaching for some time in terms of the transition. But in terms of coaching, consulting, I've always helped people with to, you know, go after their goals and make the most out of their, you know, their challenges and their situations in terms of like a mindset coach, mindset mentor, and working with men predominantly, but not always. And so that was something that, again, while I was in England, I had to, you know, be disciplined to start cutting out certain things that were location based. So whereas right. I could, you know, supply teach there, I could do certain physical things there. I knew it was going to be a big enough transition to come to America where I was going, because it's obviously quite remote. So I took the discipline. If I can't do it in the middle of nowhere, up on the lakes in the woods, 18 months before, then I'm not going to do it now. So that's a transitioned in that mode. So coaching, consulting in some shape or form has always been kind of the way to pay the bills. And especially over here, that obviously what I liked about here, you have to retrain and get your certificate for teaching, etc. So, and that's something I haven't done. I love to teach, but not in schools anymore, and I'm fine with that. but it also means I don't have that plan B to fall back on over here, which, you know, it'd be nice, but it's also nice not to have that, because it's removing that comfort zone. And as I say, I love teaching, but it was not part of my own personal journey in terms of where I wanted to go and how I wanted to teach. Because again, much like Awaken Your Alpha type stuff, I want the outcome. I want efficient stuff, and I want to have the transformation for the client. In a school setting, you have curriculum that is to a certain extent set in stone. You have to tick certain boxes. And I just, my last, you know, towards the end of my teaching career in England, I transitioned to teaching in colleges. So at least you're closer to, you know, the real world. You know, it's not fully academic. They're actually thinking, oh my goodness, I'm what am I going to do next year in the real world? And so I brought in a lot of kind of success concepts and flexed out of that. But still, you've got to tick boxes that are predetermined, even if you know and the college knows and everyone knows this is a better way to do it, or they don't need to know this, they do need to know, you know, tick that box to get where they need at that time. So that was one thing. I hate the restrictive curriculum, whereas when you're an entrepreneur and it's your own business, you're very flexible and dynamic. And if something's not working, you can literally cut that out today, and you can, you know, you can come up with ideas and just keep tweaking and enhancing things. That's exciting to sort of flex your creative muscles. And that's why, you know, for the last 3 or 4 years, the two questions I always get asked is, how do you do a podcast? How do you get a TEDx? And I can advise and coach and consult on both. The TEDx, or the Talk Accelerator, is what the podcast I've launched or launching it currently, got me more fired up. Because obviously we were talking before the interview, there's a lot of technical stuff around, and we got quite excited around the podcast and stuff, and that's always evolving. But I noticed in myself that awareness again, I got way more fired up when it came to talking about TEDx talks and helping other people, you know, amplify their message. And I knew the impact it had in my life, and I could see, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And also, I only coach or teach or consult from a position of things I've experienced myself. I'm a big believer in that. So that's, you know, I created the Talk Accelerator over the last, you know, couple of years, and I'm always tweaking and enhancing it. It's on like version 3.0, and I get excited about like redoing it and retweaking it and adding things to it, so it's more efficient, and I don't have to put that to like an educational committee board and take months and months to change that. So that's something I'm excited about. And there's going to be a new podcast that's launching within the next couple of weeks around that concept, because I've been doing the TEDx Talk Accelerator, I should say, process for the last year and a half, and taking clients through that. And now through that, as part of my process, I interview TEDx organizers on behalf of the clients, and to get that insider information. So I've got quite a lot built up, and I want to share, you know, that in the podcast format, because that's again something that's in my wheelhouse that I can do, you know, relatively easy and efficiently at this point.
So do you see yourself moving into the more of a role as like a speaker, and like doing more keynotes and really making that your biggest emphasis?
Yeah. So yeah, definitely evolving. I mean, podcasting, I love it. And I always, I feel like it's a foundation and backbone the way I've got it set up now. So it's sustainable. But, you know, like anything, if you just do the same thing without, you know, being evolving and adapting to new challenges, new things, the speaker thing has always been, for whatever reason, it's always been something that I've enjoyed, aspired to raise my game there. And I think there's a, you know, in terms of that, that's one of the things you just feel like you could keep evolving in that arena. I mean, like most arenas. And yeah, so I cut my teeth, as I say, teaching, where it's a very tough audience. You've got to be entertaining, and you've got to, they don't give you any thought for, even if you've built up some goodwill with them for years, if you turn up and you're not on form that day, that minute, the hour, they will take advantage and you will lose the room. So I don't think I'm ever going to get more tougher audiences than I've had before. So yeah, that's something. I've done some, you know, some great talks, keynotes, and some great venues. And that's something I'm stepping up over, you know, as we speak, and doing more and more. But now the book's done, because the book took a little bit longer than I expected, as most of these things, but I wanted it. I always came back to, do I want to get it out for one of my own deadlines that I've set, or do I want it done right? And it was a legacy project. I really looked at it. I had the dedication at the front of the book, like to my two boys, Dylan and Harrison, who one day will be men. And I always wrote it as if, like, without being more, say something happened to me, they're not going to, you know, this is kind of like my whole core of my philosophies and beliefs, and some, you know, really interesting takes on all aspects of life. But also, you know, they're not going to know whether, this is a little bit, he cut corners here, but, oh, he got it in for a deadline. So I made sure it was done right. And I'm really happy with how that came out. So now that the speaking side of things was always kind of, it's there, and I've done, you know, quite a bit of it, but it's something that I'd step up after the book was out. And that's what I'm in the process of doing currently. And that's, again, why the Talk Accelerator thing has stepped up as well. Because, again, if you're coaching and consulting and mentoring and helping people, a lot of the people who I work with on sort of the Talk Accelerator side of things want to get their TEDx, not all of them, but some of them, obviously, they want to step up their speaking side. And in terms of, maybe some of them want to go on to more professional speaking. And so, you know, I want to evolve that side as well. Mic drop moment. I love it. Yeah. And repair my microphone. I love it. So yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so that's, we talked about quite a few things here. I think it's important. It might not come through in this to, you know, not necessarily focus on one thing at a time, which I do think is important. Don't spread yourself too thin and try and do all these things at the same time and get nothing done. So that's why, I've certain focuses on certain things at certain times. Yes.
Well,
they all fit together.
I was about to say, it actually makes perfect sense, because you have your core message, and the podcast is a way to reach more people and to have conversations with other people and to almost challenge that core message of like, hey, this is the philosophy. Like, you know, what do you think about it? Cause I know every show that I do, I freaking challenge the way that I think, or I get the way that I think challenged. Yeah. And I'm so grateful for that. So it's like almost a litmus test of like, do these principles hold up after 800 people coming on the show at, you know, talking about it?
Yeah. Well, no, you've nailed it. Cause it's like, and that's the struggle. Once, when you're like working things out and transitioning things and think, okay, if I add another, you know, aspect to an evolve to like the Talk Accelerator, is that diluting your message? But when it all came back to it, okay, what is the core of both of them? It's, you know, awaken your alpha, it's amplify your message. It's, you know, the core of the book is personal leadership and playing a bigger game. And the TEDx stage is just a tool, is just a platform to that allows people to do that. Because they've got to have that core message, and they've got to have that idea worth sharing, and they've got to step onto that or even go after that. They've got to awaken their alpha. So it all just, you know, it all aligns. And that's something, once you get that clarity on anything you're doing, I think that's really important. It's, you know, it's for me, it's all got to be, you know, congruent with your beliefs and heading in the right direction and doing it for the right thing. Because as I say, there's so many things you can do. Just because you can do something, and even if you're good at it, doesn't mean you have to. And I feel sometimes people feel like there's pressure on yourself or from society to do that. You know, just because I was a podcaster and got known for podcasting quite well, there was definitely a pressure to then teach all about podcasting. And you know, I can teach podcasting in terms of how to set up and do a podcast, and again, all from experience. So, but just because I can does not mean I need to, you know, go fully down that path 100%. Yeah, I can do that, and if someone really wants to do that, I can. But generally, I can also, from my experience, point you in a direction of someone who that is all they do, or that's all they want to do. And so I like that, the collaboration and knowing what is the best use of people's talents. And I think just as you can zone into more and more of that, then that's, you know, you'll be more happier and fulfilled.
Absolutely. Cause it really seems like you were saying, the different things you're doing, they're vehicles to better spread and amplify your message of awaken your alpha. Like, it seems like the podcast, a way to spread it and to challenge it. The book, a way to teach it and to like codify it. The TEDx talk, a way to distill the essence of it. Like the speaking, bringing it to more people in a different way. I mean, you know, podcasting is going to reach some people. The book's going to reach some people. Speaking events are going to reach some people. TEDx is going to reach some people. Like, that makes perfect sense to me. I love that. I love everything that you're doing. So I'm curious now, I kind of want to go back and talk about the second thing, because, and this is one of those things where I want to challenge the way I think about it. Right now on my board, I have 7, and it's right over there. That's why I looked over that way. There are like 7 core disciplines that I have organized my life into, right? There's financial, physical, spiritual, industrial, intellectual, emotional, and relational. And that's how I organize my life. Yes. So like, you know, I have goals there, and actually I got that idea challenged to where now I realized I need to focus more on the systems to help me get there. Anyways, what are your core disciplines, those different areas of your life that are important to you?
Awesome. Well, I was just, I was just, you hear me flicking through pages, because as part of, again, you know, clarifying core disciplines and you know, all of my philosophies and different things, in terms of that awareness, action, and ascension, I created literally that within that, I evolved each one to 4 disciplines within that. So I mean, it's quite in depth, but I'll dig into a little bit of it actually here. So again, I know this is live, so I don't want to take up the whole show. So in terms of core disciplines, what, I mean, you just talking about how I compartmentalize different things, or what?
Yeah. Like which areas of your life are the most important, and how did you come to those conclusions?
Okay, cool. So areas of my life are most important. Number one, family. Yeah. Family, that's it. And I think dedicating time and building or creating your life, and again, comes back to what I talked about. And if you say, oh, I can't do that, or I don't, you may not want to do that, or it's just not a priority for you, but this is just a personal thing. So for me, that's a priority. So part of the entrepreneurial thing is the freedom to create your own timetable, and the freedom to, you know, stop a certain time, even if you want to carry on and work afterwards, that's fine. But I drop my boys off at school every day, and I pick them up every day when I'm in town, which is, you know, a large majority of the time. And that's really important to me. And it's one of the things, it's very easy in this situation to just, or to just keep working, and then, but it's very easy also to, in my situation, to stop and have that dedication to just stop things and go out. And you think it's only a short, you know, 5-10 minutes to pick them up, but they're the sort of things that they're going to remember, and I remember. And you know, it's the accumulation of these sort of little daily habits and disciplines. So family number one, and you know, I have the morning routines. I know you obviously interviewed a lot of people, and you probably hear about these sorts of things, but health for me is, you know, health is wealth. It's huge. Mental health as well as the physical health, and obviously they're interconnected. For me, I've always been very active. So even if I'm not talking about how it looks, because I've had people say, oh, you know, you're in shape. If I felt like I wasn't in shape, because again, once you've, you know, competed to that level, you could still be what people think, oh, you're in shape or you're training and you're fit. But to you, you could be, you know, in the worst shape of your life. So again, it's all that perspective. It's all perspective. So I think taking that time to set yourself up right for the day is really important, both mentally and physically. And so not just paying attention to what you put into your body physically, but also what you put into your mind mentally. I feel like in terms of what you're reading each day, or taking that little bit of time, and the care you do for your mindset and your mentality is more important. I was gonna say just important is more important, I would say, because obviously then that fuels your physical habits as well.
So it seems like family and health.
And obviously it all comes around there. I mean, I can go into the whole kind of overview, but you know, you said, what is the priority? And I'm just, as it is today, I know you don't want canned answers. They're the things that I really focus on as well. And obviously, in terms of, I put it in my book, I've never been driven by as a money focus. That's why I initially, you know, why I went into be a PE teacher. It was always about the lifestyle and the active, being active and helping people and things like that, and coaching and supporting people. But also, as a great quote by, I think it might be Dave Ramsey actually, that I put in the book, get control of your money or it'll forever control you. You know, I'm not driven by money, but also you can only have certain levels of freedom if you've got a way to earn a living. And I think it's important to, if I want to do the best job in these podcasts and in the book, you know, if you're an amateur going up at that against like professional writers or professional broadcasters or professional speakers, you're never going to win that, because they've committed to dedicate to themselves that they are professional. They're going to have professional standards. They're going to get paid because they're professionals. That's right. And so then they can dedicate time to mastering their craft. If you're an amateur, then, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but then it is a hobby and it is, you know, it's hard to go up against professionals and have that impact you want. So I think that's important. You don't have to be money motivated, but also you need to get a handle on that. So obviously that's important. But again, I think, the amount of finances you earn, or your finances for everyone, it's, you know, what you're currently making or your current situation, you are completely responsible for that. And I think that's an important thing to take on board. Because I think all of us could probably earn a little bit more if we were willing to sacrifice certain things. So I think it's been in, you know, and not, you don't always have sacrifice, but generally I could earn more in certain ways, but I'm also know there is a trade-off, not always, but for a lot of the times there's a trade-off with that. And I'm quite happy that you know, my boys will not be bothered if I had an extra zero in the bank. They're gonna pay more attention to if I'm physically here and present with them. So I like that time freedom, but I do believe, you know, you do need to get a handle on that, but it's also a distinct correlation to how much value you're putting out into the world.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, because it's something where I feel like everybody has to kind of figure out like where they want to be with their finances. And I actually think it's a matter of like, how much are you willing to pay for that? Are you willing to pay that cost to get there? Yeah. Because it's possible. People have done it. I mean, look back to Augustus freaking Caesar, the first emperor of Rome. When that dude passed, when he died, he literally had acquired a personal wealth of $2.6 trillion adjusted for today's inflation.
Yeah.
Okay. Easily one of the wealthiest human beings, if not the wealthiest human being in the history of the human race. Right. But he paid a huge cost for that. I mean, he built an empire and took over other countries. You know what I mean? So it's like, are you willing to pay that price?
100%. Yeah. And I mean, I know we wanted like what the focus in terms of how I put it in the book as well, in terms of some of the core priorities I focus on in the action section, it's got down to the four M's, which is might, which is obviously your physicality, your health as well, mind, momentum, and moolah, money. So I'm a big believer in momentum as well. You know, I've had periods when you've got it and Now, I don't take it for granted, because when you've got it, when you build up the momentum, sometimes it's very tempting to take it for granted and stop doing certain habits and priorities that got you to that point, and then you lose momentum. And then you're like, oh, there's a reason it was like quite easy, or it felt easy at the time. It's because you was in the zone, you were doing the right things, and you built to get the momentum. And it's a lot harder than anything people are doing, if you're trying to make changes or you're trying to get somewhere and achieve something, to then restart and regain that momentum. I think of it in terms of like the podcast. I did the cardinal sin of a podcaster. I paused the show while I moved countries. In terms of the, you know, if you're looking at like the podcast playbook, don't do that. It's everywhere on the internet. But I'm talking about the reality of what happened. I have done that, and I had some great momentum. Did I take it for granted? Maybe, but also, I had to move country, you know, in terms of the schedule that I created. So I take full responsibility for myself podcasting at that stage. It was almost breaking me. There was the way I had it set up, I had literally zero time to do much else. And so there was lots of opportunities coming along and passing as I'm like, hey, I'm too busy podcasting. See you later. And so once I paused, it's what I needed in terms of my life. Podcasting is one small aspect of it. Once I said no to that for a bit, I'm going to move country. I've got to do this. That's when opportunities really blew up, and I could actually have some time and space to reassess. And then that awareness of what I needed to do and what was a priority, and then make the most of my opportunities as well.
How long did you pause it for?
Oh, man. It could be up to 6 months. And that was another thing. It was never planned to be that long. But once, is what we talk about, momentum. Once you stop something, it's like, oh, this is quite nice. I mean, this. Oh, so, and then when do you restart? And also, man, like once you've to get things going again. And I know that that had a major impact in obviously that specific podcast. You know, you've got, I think consistency in anything is key. Yeah, that was season one to season two. But now it's a more fruitful and interesting journey to talk about like podcasting events and speaking. I speak on obviously podcasting stages and stuff, because it's not the normal journey, because you have these top podcasters, and they have the beautiful, well, they have their own struggles, but in terms of a lot of them have this beautiful progression, and yep, consistency is key, and I agree with that. And then I said, by the way, this is what I did. This is the reality. Like, why do you do that? I'm like, well, I did move country. I did have a few things on the go at that point.
So I'm curious, because I have 100% committed that sin as well.
I was going to say 100%, because I used to say as well, I used to say on the podcast, hey, if this podcast doesn't come out, like it was like three times a week. I said, if it doesn't come out, alert the authorities, because I'm probably dead. And I stuck to that. So that's the thing. I never missed it. Like, I didn't just like go off air. I said, like, I'm going to have a pause. But yeah, so I stuck my flag in the sand, and you know, there was many late nights getting the podcast edited and uploaded and stuff. And whoo, but sorry, back to you. You did it.
And it was literally for like 6 months, because I had shoulder surgery. Yep. And I was like, I can't, it's driving me nuts trying to do it with one hand. Mm-hmm. How did you finally make the decision to get back into it? What brought you back?
Oh man, that's a really good question. Never been asked that before. Refound my mojo, but I knew I had to make changes. I knew it wasn't sustainable for me how it was. So I, you know, had to make some, and it was that pausing to get that space to have a clear head, not just because, you know, the urge for a lot of things, if it gets to a stage like that, is you just want to burn the bridges and stop. And, you know, you do this, and then you sabotage yourself and don't going really well. And I felt that there might've been a little bit of that. It was going really well. And it kind of like, you know, I do, you know, a lot of times people get addicted to that underdog mentality and appreciate the climb. And then, you know, it's kind of like once you get there. Like, So I was obviously still fully on the climb. My podcast launched the same week as Tim Ferriss. he's done quite well. And I have the screenshots, because obviously based in England, of when I would get ahead of him early in the morning. I took the screenshots of that, my claim to fame, and then he would jump ahead, I think, when America woke up. Obviously, he's kept the consistency going, but I couldn't make the accurate decisions from within it at that point. I was, you know, overwhelmed, I had too much on the go, and I needed to just set pause and then take a little bit of time out to obviously move country, do a few other little things. And then it was just right. I'm going to come back at this. And it's all about the evolution of how is this going to evolve so it's more sustainable. And, you know, I didn't want to get stuck into that trap of a lot of people do, including me, of, you know, just creating a job for yourself. So, you know, you may not be working for anyone, but created a schedule that, you know, you've, and I got too much into that mentality. I felt like I had to do it instead of that I have the chance to do it. So I needed to reconfigure things that, you know, so I appreciated my opportunity. And and as I said, there's no one making you do it. And that's what I talked about before, you know, you can change things. If you don't like something a certain way, it's consistency is good, but also, you know, just banging your head against a brick wall, it wasn't going to change. So, in answer to your question, coming back, I just need a little bit of time and space to relocate, you know, set up things, and then come back at it with a, you know, a fresh perspective, and make it work. Oh, sorry, something just paused. I'm back in.
So, and I'm curious because, you know, this show, we go live, I mean, one or two times a day. So there's like a lot of volume of episodes. How do you prevent, because I love the show and it's one of my biggest passions, and I never want to get to the place where I'm like, oh, I don't want to do it. Like, looking back or even looking forward, like, how would you structure it to where, or like, what mechanisms do you put in place to make sure you never get to that point of burnout where you want to take the time off?
Yeah, I think even it's evolved again. So we're in sort of like season 5, like episode 373. And I think that this last, the most latest tweaks and changes I did in the last year or two, I kind of approached it as, what setup can I feel? Because I want the consistency that I would never, I believe I could sustain this forever, ultimately, that it would never be a burden. So for me, the podcast, my podcast, Awaken Your Alpha, goes out once a week, every week. And I felt like, again, taking that step back from it, what does it need more of? More content or more episodes? That's not a priority now when you're at 370. If someone discovers it, they're not going to think, oh, I wish there was 500 episodes. You know, that's not an issue. That's one of the things I would look at. And again, that's different, a different answer for anyone else. But now, the way it is now, it gets set up to now I can evolve, as we talked about. You know, the thought of starting a second podcast is almost like the last thing I would have thought. And I've had, you know, suggestions, ideas over the, you know, almost 6 years. And I've always, you know, with a clear head come back, no, that's not the right call. So I've been very cautious on this, because the last thing I kind of wanted in some ways, I've got a podcast and I'm very happy with how that's set up. But so there's something like the talks that are very, is completely different. I mean, in terms of the Awaken Your Alpha podcast for me. And this is, I'm really interested in why someone starts a podcast and having it, again, back to the Awaken Your Alpha concept. So it's works for you, no one else. So the Awaken Your Alpha podcast was purely, I had a message to share in terms of book format, TEDx stage, and on the podcast. And so I just started the show with not too much thought beyond, like, you know, monetization. I just wanted that message to share. And I just dived in, like, and almost killed myself for a year and a half kind of thing. Just very much, you know, inspired to do that. The Talk Accelerator podcast, completely different. I didn't want it anything like that. And as opposed to starting, just jumping into a podcast, I've been doing the Talk Accelerator process with clients for over a year, specifically as it is in its current format. And the thought of the podcast is like kind of on the back end, as in this is, you know, the episodes are going to be 18 minutes tops, like a TEDx talk. They are, all the interviews are already resources and useful for me and my clients inside my members area. So the podcast is completely on the back end of a business as opposed to the other way around. And there's so many different ways to do podcasts. It can be for, you know, raising credibility, or it can be for, you know, so someone wants to know, like, and trust, they can go and dig into that. And obviously just putting some really good value out into the world, you know, just leading, you know, giving first. So that's why, again, they're completely different formats. And I would suggest, if anyone's going to launch a podcast as well, I know we've gone down through a bit, get well ahead before you launch. I got no pressure to launch this one particularly. And I've got, you know, lots of, as I say, the interviews are already, you know, value. So yeah, that's, you know, it's a completely different, and it's niche down. The Awaken Your Alpha is broader and still niche. But, you know, if you're not interested in getting a TEDx talk, then you do not listen to this podcast. And I like that aspect, because it's very, again, we talk about that clarity of mission. It's very clear, and it's going to be massive value to the right person. And, you know, the wrong person would not even listen to it, which I love as well.
That's so fascinating. So it seems like you're just more intentional about what you're doing. You're actually taking a step back and being like, okay, what am I actually trying to accomplish here? And how can I set it up to where it works for me in my schedule? So I have a question. And by the way, that was what I heard. And if I missed something, please correct me.
I always think it's important to start with, you know, that vision of the lifestyle and what you're, like you said, what you're trying to accomplish. And then the reality of, you know, it's sometimes whenever I go in and say, I was speaking at like New Media Summit, which is all about podcasting, and you go there and you do get, you know, you get inspired, and entrepreneurs have no shortage of ideas. And you come back, you think, oh, I could start this podcast. I'm always like, whoa. And most people are always like promoting, yeah, start a podcast. And I'm like, you could start a podcast. It is an option to you, but, you know, you got to just think, is it the right for you? And the reality of, if you're going to do something properly, there's a lot of work involved in these things. So yeah, you could, I could drop that mic again.
Mic drop number two, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just going to hold it. This is messed up. But anyway, yeah, you could, you know, you could have 10 podcasts, but why would you want that many? Number one, and could you give it, you know, you got to decide what's sustainable for you and what the actual reality of that would look like in your day-to-day, your week-to-week life, because that's the important thing. So always kind of think about the lifestyle aspect first. And again, coming back to, is this something that is sustainable long-term? You know, not to say, obviously you need to be aware and, you know, reassess, and you may stop that and make that judgment that it's not the right thing in 6 months or whatever, but you need to have the reason for stopping that very strategic and logical, not just because you've created something that you can't sustain, even if you wanted to.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. That makes so much sense. At one point with this show, I was doing 5 a day. I was going crazy, Too much.
Yep.
It was fun, but then it was like after like a couple, I think I did that for like a couple months, and after that I was like brain fried. no can do. But anyways, man, I want to be very respectful of your time. I know there are two gentlemen who are
we've got 5 to 10 minutes like is the latest, but you know, obviously it's been really good on the show. We've covered some interesting stuff. Yeah.
Well, I've had a lot of fun, and you know, I do have one more question for you. Mm-hmm. and then we'll go ahead and wrap it on up. But what question should I be asking you that I just wouldn't think to ask?
Man, the reason I was laughing then is because that is the question I ask on my interview shows, and it's like I call it my get out of jail free card, because then like the guest is always like, they can't complain that they didn't get asked that one question, and I love it because it puts a responsibility on them to like take responsibility. What one question do I wish you'd ask? No, I had my only expectation coming into this is, you know, the quality of interviewer, which you have not surpassed. I expected that. And in terms of what we was going to cover, I just wanted to add some value. I just wanted to add value to people listening in on this. What's the best way to connect with me? I'm completely satisfied, man. It's been a really good conversation. As I said, I just wanted to add some value. So yeah, so if you believe we've done that, I'm satisfied my end. Yeah, that's that.
All right. I have one last question then. One more. What's your dark side?
Oh, that's a good one. How much time we got? No. man, what's my dark side? I wouldn't call it dark. I mean, I grew up in England. That's not dark side. my culture, again, this is just cultural differences I hear. I know people, but I very much grew up, obviously the drinking culture here is very different to England. So I grew up, the classic binge drinker, it almost seems like the norm. I listen to I always listen to Radio 1, the English radio here, on a Friday, for example. They're talking about going out and, you know, drinking and stuff from early, like on a Friday. And I listen to the radio over here. It's just a massive cultural difference. That's not really a dark side. It's just a difference. But, you know, I'm trying to think what's the dark side. I'm just saying, I like, if I go out sometimes, I like a good drink. But, yeah, I wouldn't really call that dark. I like to be transparent. This is not the answer. I really wish I had something juicier for you. I have to have a think on that, man. So you might have to probe some more, but nah, nothing. Again, I suppose doing all this, and obviously having these interviews, I think that comes back to living in alignment. And also, I interviewed someone, I put them in the book, actually, about, and that, you know, they're a professional speaker and stuff like that. And people are like, how do you like speak like 200 times a year or whatever like that? And we talk about that putting on a front and putting on a face. To do what we do, if you're putting on a mask, that would be exhausting, because then that, you know, that is exhausting. And doing that. But if you're actually just being transparent and author and just being, right or wrong, being you, like if I can think of a good dark side, I'm actually disappointed I haven't got a better answer on that, the dark side thing. But if you're just being you and open and transparent, that's just talking. It's not exhausting. It's just, you know, I could do this all day, every day, all the time. So I think that's important, and that comes back to choosing your path in life, because I know a lot of us, sometimes it may be the draw of money or societal pressure or that you're good at something, will go down a certain path where you cannot, you know, you cannot be yourself, and you have to put on a huge front. I mean, I'm sure we all put on different, we act in certain ways in different scenarios, but I mean like a completely something that doesn't align with your soul and your mission or what you want to be doing. And then that is, for me personally, that's soul destroying, and that is exhausting. That's it.
Awesome. Well, Adam, I want to thank you so, so much. This has been a whole lot of fun and very meaningful for me. And I'm very grateful for the time that you have shared. So thank you very, very much.
No worries. If anyone wants to connect, I'm sure you can put all the details, or if you need any information, just ask me. But Adam Lewis Walker in general, or Awaken Your Alpha, or Talk Sorry, and you'll find me. I'd love to hear your ideas worth sharing, or and you know, and how you are awakening your alpha on a daily basis. Yeah, let me know if you consume any of the content and it struck a chord, you know, or today, just, you know, reach out and connect. I'm very, very approachable.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you. And to everybody who's watching and listening, thank y'all very, very much. Y'all rock. Y'all kick ass. I love y'all. So thank you, everybody. And I will see all of you on the next episode. Take care now.